Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast.
We got a special guest. We call him Dr. Bowtie.
Dr. Bowtie. I tell you what, I am just glad to be recording on somewhat of a regular basis again. I was borderline depressed during the summer.
Our life has more of a structure now.
It does.
That we're grown up.
I get my pay rate in my life weekly.
Yeah, man. So we got a very, very awesome guest. We're excited. We've been wanting to get him on the show. But unfortunately, because he's constantly dropping bow ties all around the country and teaches and trains other folks, we wanted to wait and have a good episode where he's actually sitting down right after a very hard surgery. He did a work with an anesthesiologist actually today.
Nice.
So
the suspense is killing us. Who is it?
His name is Joe Meronfar. He goes by Dr. Joe most of the time. What else? Go. Let him like talk. I don't know why.
What up, Doc?
I feel like I need to jump in.
You do.
You guys take a breath of air. You guys are full of energy. Young, motivated, and full of energy. I like it.
Yeah.
That's us. If there's something we can bring to the table, it's energy at least.
It's the only energy.
Doc, tell us about your journey.
So, started...
How did you... Yeah, when did you start?
You know, my background, you know, fortunate. I was so... unmotivated in undergrad, which helped me because all I wanted to do was play tennis and party. So I had grades.
That's cool.
And so for me to get in dental school, I had to get a master's. That wasn't enough. I had to get another master's.
Well, I had to get two masters.
Two masters, just enough. You figure four years of getting bad grades, you need 4 years of master's.
I'll set it.
That is so funny. I didn't think about it.
What did you get your master's in?
My first one was microbiology. I studied Lyme disease, so I had to earn my $750 a month that I used to get paid. I had to teach head and neck anatomy, physiology, microbiology, and histology, which, you know, helped me tremendously. Then finished that master's, went to California, family's in food business. I had a bar, a restaurant, a nightclub, did that for a while, and got kicked out of Palo Alto, and then went and got my second master's, and did that. And I said, you know what, let's apply again, got a dental school temple. So high school, I was a tiger, college, I was a cougar, and dental school was an owl. So I got smaller and wiser.
That's right.
Smaller and wiser.
Tiger, cougar, owl.
Owl. So what year did you graduate dental school?
I finished dental school. So I was older. So I finished dental school in 2004. Don't let the gray hair fool you.
Did you, looking back, are you, I guess obviously doing the master's was a good thing. Like, would you recommend that to somebody who doesn't get into dental school? Who's like, what do I do to like kind of keep fighting this? Or
I'm telling you, if I would have got, for whatever crazy reason, with my 2.5 and a 14 DAT, if I would have gotten in, there's no way I would have flunked out. So I wasn't mature enough. I don't think I was ready. But once I get in, I, you know, it's kind of like they give you a gift. You say, you know what, I will never mess it up. And that was the was in. So once I got in, I was like, you know what, there's no way I'm going to mess this thing up. So highly recommended because, so when I got in Temple, they, you know, I was applying. So when I went to interview, it was already, you know, August, mid-August. So I was applying for the year 2001. 2000, I was applying for the year 2001. So I applied in August or early September. School was already session, you know, a month in a session. I get back. A week or two later, they call me and say, listen, guess what? You got in. I'm like, that's awesome. You know, they're like, come now. I'm like, what do you mean? Is somebody just dropped out? you know, I got so happy, then I got so upset. I said, all these years I've been applying, you guys didn't let me in. Now I'm good enough to get in, you know, a month and a half into the program. So literally got in my car, packed up, and drove from Southern Illinois to Southern Illinois to Philly, and got there like 12 hours later. And then I get there, the dean's there, like, we've never done this, a month and a half to the program, but you know, you got all these masters, all this stuff. I'm like, this is awesome. You know, here's your check. And I said, where do I stay? You know, where do I go? I don't have an idea. Like, imagine you show up and you're like, where do I go? So they, okay, let's not stress about that yet. Let's talk about the midterm you got to take tomorrow. I just wanted to cry. I was just so sad. You know, my happiest day became the saddest day. They said the biochem teacher will absolutely not waive this. You got to take the test. So they gave me 400 pages of stacked up notes, typed up. He goes, here's your study for tomorrow. You got to test tomorrow. So we recommend skipping your first two classes that you have at 8. Just go 10:30, take the biochem test. And I was like, you know, really?
Yeah.
You know, that's what you're going to do to me? And so, you know, I went home and studied. But next morning, I didn't know what to wear. I didn't know where I was staying. They took me, this guy, this German guy, everything was red velvet, smoked like, you know, been partying because they just finished their midterms. So I get up the next morning, put another suit on. I have no idea what to wear. I get, everybody's looking at me like, who is this guy coming and taking this test? Took the test, I knew I flunked it. So then I hear my name on the big, you know, PA that says, Joe, come to the dean's office. I'm like, you're going to kick me out. That was my first and last day of school. And I went, got in, and the dean's like, we're so proud of you. You got a 68. I'm like, well, 75 is failing, because yeah, but you did like, there was 13 people did worse than you did.
And they were there for the first month of school.
So they curved it, and I actually end up, you know, passing. And anyway, so dental school. So the nice thing with that was since I was a month and a half into the program, I decided to proficiency out of some of the biggest classes the first year. So I was able to just go take the final. And histology was huge in anatomy. So I just skipped it. I was able to catch up a month and a half of just wax ups and carvings. And you remember all that stuff.
That is crazy. I've always wondered about some, because there's always like one or two in the class that come in late. I never heard like the success story, but like that is insane. And obviously when we get into like all the stuff you're doing now, it just, it shows you that like, gosh, you know, for those people who are,
bro.
Yeah. And for those people who are like, you know, haven't gotten in, or I'm trying to get in, or like, you know, you get in last person in the class, who cares?
Yeah.
Because you have the opportunity to freaking do insanely great things, no matter whether you get in first to the class or you get in
first
last
to the class, and
or a month later,
so true. A month and a half later. But so you started it, and then you got out. So tell us, once you finished, you were in Philly, and you decided to move, or
yeah. So my, I knew I was old. I was one of the older people in the class, so I was just really motivated, and I knew restorative dentistry wasn't my thing. So I just really hung around oral surgery and perio, and then. My end of my junior year, there was a guy I used to be an assistant for, Bob Brown, who was director of oral medicine. And he says, hey, listen, I need an assistant. He actually gave my flying license. I was trying to get my pilot's license. And then he said, hey, come fly with me. And then I need an assistant. So I'm like, fantastic. And then you could actually go to different people's offices under his license. I could do implants. So 2 years in undergrad, I was doing implants, you know, hundreds of implants with this guy. Where everybody else is like, you know, we'll maybe see one. And we would go to guys like Balshi's office back then. And then my senior year, he's like, you know what, you need to learn a didactic because you've done hundreds of surgeries. So I finished my requirements early, and every once a month I would fly to UCLA, and I did the whole implants A to Z just to get a didactic. So when I came out, I'm like, where do I go? California, there's no way. I decided to go to Phoenix because 2004, things were booming. Got to Phoenix, found an office, jumped in, convinced the guy I was associated with to let's just buy 100 implants. So at that time, Nobel had this deal. You buy 100 implants, they send you skiing, Stein Erickson Lodge in Deer Valley.
You're like, heck yeah.
And I'm like, this is awesome. So we bought 100 implants. And I said, man, I want these. This is one of the same deal again next year. So I said, I better put these in. So I was charging same, $850 to place an implant in. This is, you know, 14 years ago or so. Same cost as a root canal. So I was able to just put 100 in, bought another 100. And then at that time, Nobel's like, you know what? We like where you're going. Let us, you know, polish you up. And so they would invite me. They had this thing called the speaker development program. And then got to know the company and the execs. And then I would just do programs out of my office.
So how did you come up? So you said something about you put in 100 right out of school in Phoenix. How did you find those 100 patients?
So, you know, 2004, Phoenix was booming. 10,000 people moved to Phoenix a month. So 120,000. So where our office was in the middle of this industrial, new, big master plan community. We were the only office there. So we were getting 30, 40 new patients a month. So I was just right place, right time, and was eager. And I mean, I was still learning. You know, place 102, I just didn't know what was ahead of me. So,
well, and you were also affordable too, which was good, because I say, like, one of my things is, you know, when young dentists are trying to learn a new procedure, like, it's better. I would much rather do 10 implants at like $1,000 or $800 or whatever it is, even in today's dollars, to get better at placing the implants and get more under my belt, than try to put, you know, charge $2,000 or $2,100 for the implant and do three of them. Because then I'm not going to get any, you know, I'm not going to get any better. So, you know, the more I place, the more I learn, right?
Yeah, you got to come slow down as far as your ego. Like, oh, I don't have to do like $3,000.
Plus, I freaking like doing them. So I'd rather do them more than fillings.
Right.
Fillings pay like $250 a filling.
The first thing that I really learned, I don't know who it was, taught me that, you know, ego experienced nerves. Your ego says do it. Your experience says you haven't done much. Your nerve says don't do it. So you don't.
Yeah, so I love that.
If you follow those rules, I mean, you'll be all right. So got in, had an office, then a bunch of restorative. We got busy, then bought another office, then started doing more surgeries. And then by 2007, I was doing a good amount of implants. And then partner up with then another partner came on board. So between me and my partners, we had, you know, 5-6 offices. You know, I was partners in two. The other guy had a couple offices. The other guy had a couple offices. So I was going around doing their surgeries. Then in about Clear Choice was coming on, and they really, you know, started the whole marketing all on four. And then so we're like, why don't we just do this and do it on the road? So I partnered up with the lab. And before you know it, we had 23 billboards in Phoenix that just had dental implants on it. We started a call center. We hired 6 people as sales reps. And we would just go knock on doors. And every 2 to 3 months, I would, nicest resort, we would just give these 2-hour learning sessions, inviting GPs, talk about our model, our idea, that we did everything to you. So then I got an oral surgeon, a periodontist, a prosthodontist, and oral radiologist. And like I said, we were able to get about 80 offices really quick. And the problem was, you know, we tree implanted about $980,000 in 3 months, but we did only like 5 surgeries because we just didn't have our stuff together. Ran out of money, dissolved everything, sold all the practices, and I ended up starting from scratch. 2012, I thought I was going to go bankrupt. And, just things weren't well at all. And just had my first kid, just bought a house and a building all at the same time. Because I think, I told my wife, I said, we're set. When we had that company, I said, this is going national. We're going to be fantastic. And
shit. Lost it all.
Oh, yeah.
So what year is this? 2008?
This is 2011.
So what looking in hindsight back, what happened? Like, what were the big reasons that went down?
So into future, like, oh my God, I mean, you know, I'm doing so many. We were buying at that time, we were buying 800 implants at a time from Nobel. So, and I'm thinking, man, this is fantastic. But we had an investor supposed to come in, but a couple million never came in. So we just ran out of money. because we were doing so
much.
Having all this stuff. So we just didn't pan out. And we just had to just like, I mean, that same, so things were good. So I sold my practices, took the money. Luckily, the money I got, I was able to buy my house and buy a building, but I had, you know, zilch coming in. So I was able to retain out of those 80 offices, 8 of them. So kept the office manager, didn't have an assistant. So I told my office manager, you work from home. And then, you know, we just start just walking the pavement, knocking on doors. And, you know, even $500 a day was $500 a day. So, and started
doing
that.
So what you said you were on you did this in a truck?
I would just drive. I had everything in my car.
That's so awesome. So you go in, you knock on the door like, hey, you want to buy you know how they do these vacuum cleaners? I want to come vacuum one of your rooms.
So, and then I said, you know what? Whatever money I had left, I hired this guy to make this booklet for me. Really high gloss, high end, like huge book. You just, like 14 pages. I said, listen, let me just give this one more shot. This is what I have left financially. So I hired this and I just mailed them to everybody in Arizona. I mean, you just constantly mail these, right? Then the phone started ringing and I took a 2-page ad in Arizona Dental Association and then just started marketing myself again. And phone.
So you went after people. I mean, you didn't go after people. You went after the dentists.
Yeah. So first went after people. So these big billboards, people would call. And these people didn't have dentists. So I said, hey, well, where do you live? They're like, here. So then I would look up the cross streets, find a dentist, say, hey, we're going to come to your office, do the surgeries. And this is going to be your portion. You do the restorative. I do the surgery. On top of that, I'll give you rent for me using your facility for the surgery.
So you're literally bringing them patients.
Yes. Yes. Wow. I did everything. I brought the patients, the assistants, and the equipment.
Dude, he's such a hustler. I didn't know he's such a hustler.
Well, and what's... Like, and I don't want to overlook one aspect of this too. Like, I think what's so cool about the uniqueness of dentistry is, you know, you can ride up and you can have essentially what would, you know, really hurt and ruin a lot of people's, you know, financial futures and their practices and everything. But at the end of the day, you can be left with almost nothing, but we have a DDS at the end of our name. And like, as long as we have that, we have the ability to go out and make a good living and catch up. So I think it is a really unique thing that we have. It's like, we can fail because we can get right back up. And you know, at the end of the day, I think it's just a unique thing about our profession, but that is just crazy.
You know, when I moved to the States from Iran in 84, you know, I was so fear of speaking in front of people and I would just break, shut down. And you know, the best thing that happened to me is, again, getting my master's. I had 180 nursing students I had to teach to. Then make $700 a month. I need a job. So one of my first real jobs, I was a headhunter for this IT company. So they taught you how to network and how to really retain relationships and actually, you know, convince people that, you know, credibility doesn't come from me saying how good I am. Credibility comes from other people talking about you, right? That's credibility. So there's nothing I can do to make myself credible. But, you know, the next person says, listen, trust him. Trust me. This guy will take care of you. So I was able to get that credibility in Phoenix. And then one by one, docs came on board and we were able to get things back going. And, you know.
So eight of those offices, it kind of got you back on your feet. And now this is around, I'm thinking 2014, 13?
So 2012 was just like, I was doing all right. And then 2013, we would just start cranking again. And really, you know, I mean, think about it. Go in an office and, you know, do an overdenture and a bilateral sinus lift, you're done.
Right. And then you do the hard work, or I guess I should say you do the foundation, then you leave these. Now, how much did you trust these people to leave and take care of these folks after you left them? Like, how much complications, how much problems, or if you had any problem? Because I'm just thinking of these people look at you, they'll be like, what did you just do? You went through his sinus?
Yeah. So the headache was one of the reasons we went from, I came down from 80 to 8, you think, wow, you couldn't retain these people. part of it was they counted because back then I had a team of oral surgeon, prosperity. So we had a team that could manage all these. Now, people call me and say, hey, I just sold a dual arch all on four. Come do it. I said, great. I'll bring my team in there. We do it. But then we leave. They would have no idea how to manage it. So that was a tough part. So now I said, you know what? Let me reinvest in these people and actually educate them. So that's, we started doing this. I said, let me just start. So, I mean, if you look at me now, then I was up to 20, but now I'm only up to maybe 5 or 6 offices, but these 5 or 6 offices give me about 100, 150 implants each a year.
Wow.
So I can go in. You invested
into this training, and that's how you kind of became more, I guess this is the next direction that we were going to get after, to where you started teaching and enjoying teaching again, because you always had that training thing, I guess, back in the day from the med school, I mean, from the doing the master's, no?
Right. Yep. So about 3 years ago, where really my life changed, and it really, you know, I took a look at myself, what I'm doing, and the giving back part. So in early 2015, I was reintroduced to, at that time it was known as CAS, which is Central Arizona Shelter Services, which is the largest center in the U.S. as far as, Dr. Payray's been there and he's seen the facility. It's the only kind of one of a kind that the homeless actually have a home. If you look at in the country, in every metropolitan area, we have a huge problem with homelessness, right? In the 70s, you got all the vets, you have all these mental hospitals that closed down. And then, that's where the homelessness, exploded. And they're like, how do we deal with this? Well, if you go to every major city, they'll give you housing, they give you shelter, they'll give you food, they may give you medical, there's no dental. Dental doesn't exist. So our founder, Chris Volchek, visionary dentist who really doesn't do dentistry, but he looked at it as his mission, and that's what he wanted to do, and he started a trailer. And now we have a beautiful center inside the shelter. It was called Right Away. We're our own nonprofit, the only really true nonprofit that takes care of this veterans, homeless, and the working poor. So came on. I knew all about it, but just didn't have time to go and help out. And they asked me, hey, we had somebody who was doing this. They're leaving. Would you mind coming here and just help out? I said, you know what? I'll come in. I'll give you guys half a day a month. But once you get there, it just sucks you in. You look at, oh my God, look at what we can do here, right?
Yeah. Look at this opportunity. It's like the first time I went there, I'm like, it's like this dog that looking at this like steak. But I was like, man, this is amazing. Look at all these people.
Did you just say a dog looking at a steak?
Like, I felt like so much salivation.
A very hungry steak.
Very hungry.
So, and I came in, I was like, look what you guys have. Like, what do you mean? I said, let me get this thing straight. So state allows dentists to fly in to Phoenix, Arizona, come to shelter and practice for 14 days. They're like, yeah, as long as they have a good standing license, they can come in. I said, wow. And I said, I can do program. Like, yeah. I'm like, if you guys give me the rights, I will run with this. They said, okay, here's the keys to the van. Go for it. It over. They made me director of dental education, and in 2015 I launched it. We tried to do it with Nobel first. It didn't go well because again, this was my first time. And live surgery in the U.S. in this magnitude really wasn't there. You can go to universities, but you can go to people's like they would have. You can come to my office, but not to the level we wanted to do it. So the first course was with Neodent. Neodenta, we did, had 6 or 7 docs flew in, and I think we did 120, 140 implants in 2 days. And I was like, wow, what just happened here? And the word got out, and then affordable dentures and implant centers came on board. And at that time, they said, hey, we have one doc, we're going to send them to you, because they used to go to see Mangalo in Mexico, somewhere in Mexico.
Yeah, Guadalajara.
Yeah, they used to go there.
I went there.
Yeah, and they,
they called me. They called me. Mangalo used to call me implant monster. He called me, you're an implant monster.
And that's a compliment.
Hey, this guy doesn't want to go to Guadalajara. Can he come to you? And we're going to come check it out. So he came there. I lined it up. This guy came in and I said, Kunch, come there early. I have a dual arch all on four. He can watch me do it. It's still a full arch kind of thing. He kind of get a grasp of what we do. And then Thursday, Friday, we go to the center. Guy came in. I mean, he was motivated. We did start Thursday morning. By Friday at noon, this guy had already done 24 implants. And they're like, wow. They're like, do you have any more patients? I said, I opened a door short of the population. I said, absolutely. So we started a relationship with them, and it's been very successful. We've had great support, and BioHorizons was great support. And at that time, Justin with Implant Pathway, he was helping their team, and so we took this thing to the next level. I mean, now when they come, we do 240 implants in 3 days.
That's unbelievable.
So yeah, give us a little stats. So right now you have, are you working currently with other corporates, or is Affordable Dentures the only one, or how many, how open is this center for other folks to come in?
So this thing has been such a blessing. You know, I never thought in my wildest dreams I'll be placing 3,000 implants a year. And again, I'm not doing all 3,000, but I'll tell you what, we're touching these patients one time or another. So the volume is crazy. I mean, the sinus lifts, you know, there's days we do 10 to 11 lateral windows. You name it, we do it. We have a great relationships, great support from BioHorizon, Nobel, Straumann, Park Dental Research.
See, that's unbelievable to have like that many different, you know, essentially competitors working together too, to, you know, really do something special. And there's, I mean, there's nothing like this in the U.S.
No, nothing like in the U.S. And you know, the beauty is at the beginning, of course, they want exclusivity. They don't, you know, but they play so nice under, because this all for the charity. It's all for helping our mission. And that's why, I mean, since we started this program, you know, I put a great team together. And now we have, like I said, Danaher, the VP of Danaher, they flew us all to Yerba Linda. And then the whole team flew to us, and they're donating about $500,000 for us to expand. But not only this, they're not giving me chairs, they're giving me operatories. They're giving me, you know, units with x-rays and sensors and combing. You know, Danaher, they own, you know, Nobel, they own Implant Direct, they own Cable, Pell and Crane. They're giving me a study center. They're giving me everything we need. Just recently, we're fortunate Clear Choice is coming on board. And, you know, they'll be doing some training with us. Shine's been popping out. Benko, Park Dental Research, Meisinger. Wow, let's see who else we have on board that helps us.
So there's a lot of people. And
yeah, A-Titan Instruments, Hugh Friede, Carl Schumacher.
Just everybody, yeah. I mean, that's insane. And to me, I mean, like, because look, at the end of the day, you can go to a lot of third world countries and place implants and do stuff. But to be able to do it in our own country on people who, you know, are getting follow-up care, they're getting restored.
Their life.
Yeah. Fighting for our country and doing things. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Our promise to them is that their implants get restored. You know, again, I don't know how other companies do it or how other training centers, but that's our goal, our mission. And we comply with that, because what we do is, for every implant that comes in, we have a matching locator or an abutment that goes out.
Cool. So how does that, so when you do, who's doing all the restorative? Do you get to, as like a doctor coming in, get to do some of the restorative, or are there like residents, or how does that work?
I do some, but majority is done by our, we have a full-time doc. She was actually one of my residents.
Oh, cool.
She was fantastic. We have Dr. Fazel, who runs that. He's in charge of the two residents, AGD from Lutheran. They're Christina and Monica. They're great. This is our third year having, actually, this is our fourth year having residents. We started with one. Now, first year we had one. That was 2014, then 15, We had two. Then, yeah, so we have two. So as we expand, we're going to have more residents. So, yeah, so they and we have volunteer docs as well.
And are most of these full arch stuff, singles, mixture of both?
Mix of both. We do a lot of singles. So the affordable courses, those are all full arch. They come in. We have about 60 to 80 arches lined up. And then they you know, anywhere from 2 to 8 implants per arch.
Wow. Golly, that's insane.
I mean, yeah. It's so amazing because, you know, the thing is about it is what I like or impressed me the most is you start going there and you see these clinical stuff. And we're going to start talking a little bit more clinical. Yeah. But he customizes the case or the courses based on the patient, the amount of knowledge this doctor has before they come in. So he knows when they get there, they know how to numb the patient. they know how to raise a flap. They know how to use the instrument. So like, and then he's got contracts or a lot of connections with these companies. So the guy who goes and trains and get these implants thrown in or place them and work with these instruments, they can go and purchase them right away with a good, nice deal. So it works out either way because a lot of things with these courses, people go and do a lot of things and then they come back and they never practice. Yeah. They never do the thing. So the one cool thing is that you actually get to do it and also get everything ready to go by Monday to do it at your office.
Doc, what do you think about all the, like if you go to any dental schools now, you know, and you go up in there and say, hey, what do y'all want to do when you graduate? Everybody wants to place implants, you know, and you kind of talk about I love that where you're saying the ego and experience and nervous and all that stuff. And, you know, there's this idea of when we graduate, we have a lot of ego, you know, that's undeserved at that point. And, you know, and I've been there and, you know, you take one little weekend course and you think you can jump in and do it. And, you know, what do you say to like the young dentist that's wanting to get into this, the best kind of way to go about it from just, you know, just jumping in all the way?
Yeah. So, you know, what my at our center, you know, these people that we treat, I look at them as friends, family, and I want the best care for them. When the doctors come in and there are some new graduates, some have been practicing for 4 years, it doesn't really matter. They got to take care of the patients. So we want to teach them enough not to hurt somebody. Because we can easily, with the stuff we show them, with the instruments, equipment, with the technology we have, they could truly go and hurt somebody. What I don't have control over is their ego. What I can show them is, you know, how to treat somebody safely. But my thoughts are combing. My thoughts are three. You know, I scan everybody. I have three combings, right? So we have an ICAT, we have a Carestream, and we have a cable unit. Cable unit is still in a box, but it's going to be opened up soon. So I don't touch, if a person doesn't want, that's just my policy, right? So because it's not the fact that, yes, I know this patient has a 18 millimeter from the crest to the nerve, and they have 10 millimeters buccolingually. Well, how is the quality? How is the quality of, you know, the measurable bone? What am I getting myself into? We had a case where doc went in, just like I told you, they put the implant in, but as the implant went past it literally fell into this hollow bone right at the top of the nerve. There was no measurable bone whatsoever. It was just, so these things can happen. And you know, one of the things I do is, my other job is I'm an expert witness for a lot of these attorneys in town. I only protect the dentist. So I get, you know, if I show you over here, there's my pile of that's just a recent case that I got. So, and the biggest thing for me is nerve injury. So that's the most cases I get. So, you know, to me is.
So the first question you probably ask is, did they use combium?
Exactly. So for me is combium is the first thing. And, you know, everybody wants to do it on four, but the problem is they don't, you know, the another case I had to protect the dentist was, where's your probing depth? Where's your pictures? Where's your, you know, where's your, you know, where's
diagnosis? Your, like, well, how did you come up to this conclusion of doing this all on four?
Exactly. So, you know, again, that, it always goes back to ego, right?
What is your biological width? Do you ask them that?
Exactly. And where is my primate? Where is the biological width? So, the point is, yes, it's a great option, but it's not the only option. So I tell the dentists who are graduating, you know, just, you know, take your time, pick the right cases, build up the confidence, because a couple of mistakes, you really could ruin, you know, I don't want anybody coming and wasting their time, wasting their money, or going back and, you know, causing harm to anybody. So, you know, being, you know, one of the reasons I think we get to a certain level, even myself, I look at it, I mean, in a humbling way, I can say, I place 1,000 implants a year. I don't even know how many implants. I know after 10, 15,000, I stopped counting how many implants I placed. But it's not about that, because from one case, you know, I can learn so much from even from somebody else, right? So to me, it's just we have the technology, right? We have the cone beam. We have the printers. You can print guides. You can, you know, it can be safe. To me, I look at these things, ego, experience, nerves. And I look at, the other thing I look at is, you know, safe, predictable, and cost effective for my patients. So how do I get to that being safe, predictable, cost effective, right? Well, I can scan everybody. I can, just in my noble clinician, you know, I don't have to make a guide, but you spend 10 minutes looking at that anatomy, looking at, you know, the patient already. So you can now safely, predictably do your surgery.
What about free-handed versus guided surgery?
So 90% of my cases are 98% are freehand. Most of the cases I do are full arch. And, you know, with my all on fours, for my teaching cases, doctors that come in, some of them, they do want to know how they can do guided. Again, I can't say I've done thousands of guided. I can say I've done hundreds of guided cases and I love it. But for my all on fours.
Talk about the pros and cons maybe of both. Like, cause obviously, I mean, you have some people that are very stanch on either side of the line on that. And, you know, I think we were talking about this earlier before actually we got on about, you know, your fully guided full arch solutions versus freehanding them. And I think it's a very interesting kind of discussion.
Let's just walk it from a single tooth. Okay. So if a person who's been not into surgery and doesn't know anything about how patient management, the complications, so they don't know what they don't know, right? And they can fabricate a guide for tooth number 18 or 19. Everything's great. They come in, they put the guide in, and guess what? The drills don't fit because the patient can't open enough, right? I mean, one of the biggest mistakes I see, right? So it was not even on the radar to what to look for, right? So they're really, and I look at it as, it's either you're accurately accurate or you're accurately inaccurate. It's garbage in, garbage out. If you take a scan and there's noise, there's stitching, and you don't recognize that, you plan your surgery on that. You send it to whoever. You do it yourself. You put the patient's mouth and you drill and you're in soft tissue. Well, guess what? That was noise. That wasn't bone. That was patient movement. That was scatter. That was stitching. So these are the things you need to look at is, you know, my ICAT, you know, we're doing 40 to 50 scans a month on it. Well, that thing is calibrated every 4 or 5 days. You know, certain machines have to be calibrated. And if they're not calibrated, if the chair is not aligned. So to me, I look at all those things. So garbage in, garbage out.
I don't know. That's what I'm thinking. Is my
comb beam? Because I've been getting not so nice scans lately.
and if the companies tell you, oh, you don't need calibration, nonsense. I mean, nonsense. They have to be calibrated, you know. So that's the most important thing for me. And then it comes down to, okay, what if the guide, you know, there's been times I put a guide in and I'm doing tooth number 19, 20, and I'm doing number, you know, 29 and 30. I put the guide in, I snap it in, man, this is great. I go snap it in on, I press on the left side, the right side pops up. And I'm like, what do you do? Right? Well, I found it that something, at one point, somebody made a mistake. Is it me? Was it on the, So these are the downfalls of guys. Like, well, how do you manage that? How do you maintain that?
Well, that's my big fear for young dentists too, who, you know, get sold on, like, I'm a big believer in that you should learn to freehand implants before you do guided surgery, right? Because what happens in these situations?
My recommendation is do a couple hundred implants first. Be able to really, to me, is tissue management. Tissue is, if you understand the biology of wound healing, if you understand biology of socket healing, if you understand the biology of bone morphology, bone morphology and understand histology and how things heal, and when you raise a flap, how to do it properly, how to close your, wounds properly, how to manage the attachment properly. That's you need to understand that. So you can do a beautiful guided surgery, but guess what? Your guy you just put in, you did a tissue punch and now you got no attachment.
You have literally no dad.
The anatomy. One of the cool things is that he introduced me to this app, which, what was the app again? The name of it? It's on my phone.
Human body. Yeah,
it's human body. For anybody listening to this, we don't get paid for this, honestly. I love it because it shows you the arteries, vessels, anything you go through.
It's called it. I don't know if you can see that. It's called the visible body.
Visible body. That's the name of it.
No, not human body. Visible body.
Yeah, visible body. And it shows you inside out. You could toggle and get in and out and all the structures within the body. Where's the foramen? How is it? What is it coming out of? Where's the, all the nerves and arteries, especially in the cases of where you are like in the sinus, you're like, where is this going to be?
Which one should do I buy the expensive one or the cheap one?
I will start with the cheap one and then you're going to end up buying the big one.
I think it's about $24, $25 or
$25.
It's worth it because I go back. I mean, any patient I have questions.
I'm thinking it'd be good for Botox is what I'm thinking. Oh, it'd be good to look at the muscles.
I forgot about that.
You know, if you look at that, that thing, you can put it on an airplay and really, I showed that people, like when we do a full arch lowers, right? And people are so concerned, like, oh, where is this? I'm going to drop number 18 or 19 implant in. I don't want the lingual artery. I said, well, lingual artery is a midline structure. Comes off the carotids. And it comes in the midline by the tongue. It doesn't travel against the astromyohyoid you have to worry about. So, to me, is understanding that. So, guided surgery, you got to be able to get your stuff out of
harm's way.
I love that. Accurate or inaccurately, accurately inaccurate. That's a
good one.
Yeah, maybe, you're just dropping pearls, man.
Maybe that would be the title of the episode.
Yeah, and I think the accurately accurate or accurately inaccurate, I think I saw that from a slide of Dr. Scott Gans. So credit, I believe that's where I was. So I'm not sure if he came up with it or somebody else. But so anyway, so my thing is I really, to me is I was a weekend warrior who learned all these. Luckily, I had the core knowledge of head and neck anatomy, biology, histology, wound healing, which helped me. So surgery, I love it. If I have 3-4 teeth in a row, I gotta, I would utilize it, but I'm still doing my tissue management. I'm still raising a flap. I'm not doing it just all,
through the tissue with blindly kind of.
Yes. And I love to, with putting a bone reduction guy, but the problem is if you're not just dead on, then you're off. So make sure you have room to, You got room for error. So
okay. So here's my clinical question of the day for y'all. So when we get into a full arch situation and we've reduced the level, like once the teeth are gone, once you've reduced the bone, that's where I tend to get off track, or not off track, but I get worried I've lost my sense of reference, right? So now, okay, did I remove 5 millimeters of bone? Like, so now, and now, how much, what size implant can I place? How do y'all manage that to know your reference of where you are without taking just a new cone beam?
I usually do it before surgery. I know 6 millimeter based on how much bone I need. So when I mark it with my perioprobe and the marker after the teeth come out, so like I visually take the teeth out from my cone beam 3D, and then knowing when I take it out, I have 4 millimeter, for example, left in the socket. And then that gives me another 12 millimeter on top of that. So I have 16 millimeters. So like I kind of go with.
So you look at like what you have socket. Left in a socket. Right. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Especially on the bicuspid. What about you, Joe? How do you look?
Most of, 99% of cases that I do, people have teeth. So what I do is, similar to what Dr. Peyre says, so I look at the socket, right? So I have an index. So if I have to take out, say, 12 teeth, and I'm taking, like, so I'm doing an uppercase, I'm taking all the teeth out. So what I do is, right off the bat, from incisal edge on an adult clinician, which I think is one of the best softwares for this, I measure from incisal edge to, and I go down, if I'm doing zirconia, I go 12 millimeters. If I'm going to a hybrid with a bar, I go 15 to 17 millimeters, depending on the patient type. So that way, I know that what I need for
reduction, for bone reduction.
Exactly. So then what I do is, I can take the teeth out, says, okay, well, how much then bone do you have to reduce? So then I measure from the, you know, the crest to the same spot. So, okay, that is 6 millimeters. Well, a lot of times what I have, I still have the depth of the socket. So then I measure from that, okay, if I do this, reduce this, I should have these sides, 3 millimeters in this socket, 4 in this socket, none in this socket. Then if you have a big whiteboard, I can just write down, hey, my assistant, read off the sockets to me. She'll say number 3, number 4. But this socket has 2. And I says, you know what? I'm not there yet.
Therefore, I still have 5 millimeters in that socket,
for instance. Exactly. So that's gotcha. The best way you can, you know, they say you better check yourself if you wreck yourself. So right there, you
check yourself.
I just aged myself with that song. But that way, I have a great reference based on the depth of the socket. And from, so that's the best way you can do it. And you don't have to worry about, oh, because I see people do it and then they put it, they go scan the patient again.
Oh, that's too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know one of the cool
things. Oh, they're sedated too. That's a pain in the freaking ass.
Sedated ones, you just, you might as well give that up. You're like, dude, I'd rather not even do it. For the ones that I do distally, especially on 4 ones that I have not done augmentation sinus and I'm just kind of angling it, I do look at the bicuspid sites and then I stick my pilot in and then I take a PA x-ray.
And oh, gotcha, gotcha, gotcha.
From the PA to the floor of the sinus is where I could see the angulation. And then that's how it kind of gives me that distal one. Because I get a lot of questions from patients, a lot of dentists, that where is your distal one? So, man, this has been a fun interview. I know Joe, he's very busy man these days.
Dude, this has been fantastic. I like these episodes where I just get to ask my clinical questions.
How about, what did you do in Pennsylvania? Didn't you have a lecture there?
So we were supposed to do a lecture with Kois and some other fantastic lecturers. What happened was I had a Nobel course and it was supposed to be 2 guys. They came to be 6 guys and the dynamics of their meeting changed. So we're going to go from 2 days to a 1 day and they said come Friday, but I couldn't because I was already committed to Nobel. But I'm really looking forward to the DIA.
Oh, yeah, baby. Woo-woo! DIA is coming.
Yep.
Hey, guys, if you haven't got your ticket, you go to influencedental.com right now and purchase them. Send me a receipt so I can get you some Millennial Dentist Podcast goodies from Sully's Badge.
Well, anybody who is really interested as far as what we do, you know, they can go on BrighterWay Live. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to bring on Scott Lauer, who is our VP of operations. You know, Scott has experience with the implant side. He ran, you know, the New Mexico. He ran Arizona and Nevada for Nobel. He was the regional manager. And then he left there and went on to PDS. He ran their pediatric division for the whole country. And then a year ago, I was able to bring him on as a consultant. Now he's full time with us. So he's really been great as far as because he understands both sides, right? So when we're dealing with people coming in, so he can really quantify the docs who want to come take my program and relay back to me. So anybody who's, you know, interested, they can check us out on BrighterWay and
BrighterWayLive.org.
BrighterWayLive.org.
We will make sure that is in the show notes. Well, Doc, thank you so much for joining us. This has been fantastic. We will have to do it again. Gosh, I want to definitely do it again because I want to get seriously clinical on some things. But
you know, the cool thing about Joe is when you go to these courses and he teaches, the way that he's got this passion for teaching, it makes you want to kind of like love this stuff. I mean, you go there and dude, there's nothing but like blood everywhere. And
my wife's gonna kill me because I have so many C courses right now I want to take. I literally could be on like I think every weekend next year.
You know what? Oh, let me tell you this. I've spent $47,000 this year on CE.
Good for you. Y'all hear that, people? Y'all want to know why Dr. Payray is successful? All of our listeners out there, they say, how does he do this? How do this? This guy invests more time and more money in himself than anybody else.
My accountant is getting mad. He's like, dude, you can't do it. Then there's no more. No. So I'm
you
not
keep
doing
running.
More.
You keep running. No, I disagree.
Payray has been on CE. I spend about $47,000 on my outfits. You know, this is what I wear.
Now that I believe, I have never seen you not looking fresh. So...
if you want that, you know, you want to be successful, you got to dress the part. So if you want that guidance, you go on Lubes, like Louboutins, Lubes, Lashes, and Fashion. That's Lubes, my wife's Lash. Blog. She'll teach you how to dress properly.
I love it. I got, Doc, you'll be proud of me then. I just got two custom suits made for DS World where I'm speaking down there. So I'm trying to look fresher, trying to get shake off this millennial thing.
That's awesome.
I'll try to bring on it. A fresh outfit for the DIA.
Yeah. I love the outfit you had on for the.
Thanks, man. I think.
How was that? We didn't talk about this. So Soli, by the way, he just had a lecture in Lexington. This is probably one
That's
of the fun. Biggest
ones. The most one of the biggest ones I've done.
90 some people, and okay. Talking about sleep apnea, CAT cam, and 3D.
That's fun, man.
We should have an episode just to have go over some of that stuff. Maybe get CAT cam people involved.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
Because it was awesome. I just saw some clips of it before we started. And I'm like, man, he is crushing it. 90-some people.
It's fun.
Good job.
It's fun.
Awesome.
Well, I know. Whose office are we at? Where are you at?
Where am I?
You know, I can tell you're a busy man. You got your books up top.
That's right.
You got your shoes.
My office looks so trash in this kind of cluster. I love it. All right, everybody.
Thanks, man.
Everybody, work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.